Welcome. Welcome to all new and returning students. And I'm especially happy to see so many new faces in our different programs. It is a joy to see all the new faces here, and it is a joy to see all of you returning here. And welcome, of course, to my dear colleagues in the faculty and in the staff. I welcome you all to a very special year, because this year, this academic year, we are commemorating 20 years since the International Theological Institute was founded by St. John Paul II. And this we will celebrate. We will celebrate it on the 1st of October, when we have our 20th Dies Natalis, birthday of our university. It is the day exactly 20 years ago this great saint, John Paul II, signed the decree establishing the ITI under the patronage of another great saint, Saint Thérèse of Lisieux. And this is the reason that when we entered as a procession into this hall, we as faculty stopped at the image which you see at the end of the hallway here of Saint Thérèse and entrusted ourselves to her and all our intentions for this year. We are, however, privileged to be under the care not only of these two great saints, but also two other patrons, Saint Thomas Aquinas and Saint Zizlizva of Lembek. And Ukrainians, please forgive me my bad pronunciation. So this is going to be a special year. And as that would require for a special year, I would like to start with a story. I would like to share something with you, which I lived 10 days ago. I am sure you are all aware, and if you are not aware, you should be very soon, of the intense persecution of Christians that we are experiencing around the world today. In fact, as Pope Francis has already said it at various occasions, it is the most intense persecution of Christians ever known in the history of mankind. And this persecution is taking place seemingly far from us, but much nearer than we would care to think or to want to think, especially in the Middle East and in certain parts of Asia, where Christians die by the sword daily in Syria and in Iraq, in Pakistan, in Nigeria, and so many other countries. They die by the sword when they are not raped, tortured, or enslaved. Now, those who have been at the ITI longer know that this is a topic I often bring up because of the scandalous silence in the West on this genocide, on this persecution that is going on. And this is the reason why I bring it up. And I will continue to bring it up as long as it is necessary. Last weekend, I had the great honor to chair a conference in Rome of Catholic politicians from all over the world. And this conference was entirely dedicated to the plight of the persecuted Christians around the world. And we had invited the patriarchs and bishops of the persecuted churches in the Middle East and Asia and Africa. And so we found ourselves in the presence of patriarchs of almost all the Christian churches in the Middle East and in Asia, and bishops as well. And we really lived there Christian unity. There were there Catholic, Orthodox, Coptic, Anglican bishops and patriarchs. And it was indeed, as Pope Francis has already remarked before, we were living the ecumenism of blood, because those that are persecuting the Christians don't make a distinction to which church they belong. They are simply persecuting them because they are followers of Christ. And one of the bishops I met there was the Greek Catholic Archbishop of Aleppo, or better to say, the Melkite Bishop of Aleppo. His name is Archbishop Jean Barre, and he's the Archbishop of the largest city of Syria, Aleppo, even larger than Damascus. And this city, if you have been following the news a little bit, has been suffering tremendously. This used to be one of the most vibrant cities of the Middle East, where Christians and Muslims and Jews and other peoples lived together in relative peace and prosperity. And this bishop, Archbishop Jean Barre of Aleppo, was at our meeting and was visibly, physically carrying the suffering of his flock. And I could see it in his face. I could see it in the way he walked, in the way he talked. He visibly carried the suffering of his flock. And he really, really conquered my heart with this suffering, because he showed so clearly what our Christian brethren in these countries go through. He told us how he came to Rome out of Aleppo by car through a rain of bullets and bombs. He told us how his priests are being killed, his churches are being bombed or burned, families escape the city, women are being enslaved as sexual slaves, and the list goes on and on and on. And I was thinking as I was preparing for these words, do we realize what this is? Could you imagine that our church here in the village would one day be bombed and burned out? That the Stephansdom in Vienna would end up in rubble? That priests would simply disappear? And the list goes on. But do we realize that the church in the Middle East is the church? Is where our faith was born, where the church has been for 2,000 years, that there are monasteries there of 1,600 years old that are being pillaged, that are being burned down, that are being emptied? Can we even start to imagine that this could happen to us? Certainly the Christians in the Middle East who have suffered persecution for generations, even they had a hard time imagining that. But if we don't pay attention to what happens there, and if we don't show real solidarity of what happens there, and pray on our knees for peace in that region, might this also happen to us one day? I was impressed by Archbishop Jean Barre because he pleaded with us to pray for him, to pray for peace in his country, to pray for his people, to help in whatever way we can. And there were four things in which I was specifically impressed as I talked to him and as I spent time with him and listened to him. First, as I already told you, his visible suffering. Second, his courage and faithfulness. Third, his call to speak up. In fact, he was as bold as addressing all the bishops from the West present at the conference to finally please speak up and to speak to their congregations in their churches, in their dioceses, about this grave injustice that is going on against our brethren and against the peoples in general of the Middle East, not only the Christians, but many other peoples. And he begged for prayer. So his call to speak up. And fourthly, what impressed me by Archbishop Jean Barre was his lived theology. His lived theology. And this is something I would like to speak a little bit more about with you, and I would like to reflect on with you a little bit more, because it struck me as I saw this man. Beware of purely speculative theology. Please be aware of pure speculation. Your theology or your academic studies have to be real, have to be, as did the great masters of theology, they have to deal with the real problems of this world, a world that is burning, a world that is crying out for the Word of God. And as Father Federico already beautifully mentioned in the sermon of today, how fitting were the readings. Beware of intellectual pride. Stay humble and focused on the goal of this high spiritual and academic calling that you have, to know Christ and to bring his word into the world. If you leave the ITI in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, and you are not able to interact with the world and bring his word into the world, then your time here has been wasted. So please beware of pride that we academics so easily fall into, intellectual pride. You know, Christ speaks about the Pharisees. We are sometimes ourselves Pharisees. Humility is very important in the studies we pursue here. And Archbishop Jean Barre showed that to me and reminded me of that, which is why I'm sharing his story with you. He should be an example for all of us. Now, what does the ITI aim for with its unique formation program? We aim to form here leaders for church and society. Now, that sounds very grand, but what does it actually mean? Well, first of all, our graduates around the world testify to this. But what is a leader? And moreover, what distinguishes a Christian leader? As I was preparing these words, I was watching on YouTube the commencement speech held by a highly decorated U.S. Navy Admiral William McRaven. He gave this commencement speech 2014 at the University of Texas in Austin. Not necessarily a Christian university. But I was very struck by the fact that what he said could in many ways almost be taken directly from the gospel. You see, Admiral McRaven was until recently the commander of the Navy SEALs. Now, those of you from the United States will be certainly familiar with the Navy SEALs. They are the most elite troops the United States Armed Forces have, and they are arguably the best trained military in the world. And in a very practical way, Admiral McRaven applied the gospel teaching of Christ, calling us to be faithful in the small things, like Saint Mother Teresa of Calcutta, who was proclaimed a saint yesterday. And he did that by explaining the grueling 6-month Navy SEAL training that he went through. And he takes the example of making the bed to explain the thinking behind this. Every morning, very early in the morning, there would be inspection of the rooms of the recruits. And they would be inspected on how they made their beds. And their beds have to be meticulously made until the last little detail and every fold, everything. And if it wasn't perfectly done, the sergeant would just rip off the sheets and would say, start all over again. And he was saying, well, what's the sense of this? Isn't this ridiculous? Aren't we wasting our time? And then he said something which I thought could almost come directly from the gospel, and that's why I was inspired by it. He said, if you can't do the little things right, you will never do the big things right. Isn't that exactly what Christ says? If we cannot be faithful in the small things, how can we ever be faithful in the big things? So it is for you, dear students of theology and the other academic fields. You have to learn first to be faithful in the small things, in the humble things, in the apparently invisible things. If you want to excel in theology or in any academic field that you pursue here, you have to be faithful in the small things first. And that is a much bigger effort than you might think, as we all know from our personal experience. And I would like to take four of those small things to remind you of that and to encourage you at the beginning of the academic year. Small things you can work on and that can actually then become a big blessing if you are faithful in it. The first one is charity. Charity in the small things of every day, in the life of community, in the way you treat the other. We had our faculty retreat last week in which we prepared the year. And one of the things we were discussing is that we have seen over the years that students, especially those who have been here a little bit longer, some of them tend to take upon them an air of, ain't I great? I have learned so much theology. I have learned much philosophy. I know it so well. And they start to become less and less willing to listen to the thinking of another, to listen to the opinion of another, to even be able to disagree without telling the other one that he is an heretic. We have to be in community, charitable in those small things, how we treat our fellow human beings in the daily details of life, in the daily small things of life. I again had that experience a few days ago. I myself also an eternal student in learning that. And I was sitting in a train to Tirol, where I had to attend the funeral of a good friend. And the lady who cleans the train came by. And by the grace of God and an inspiration of the Holy Spirit, I struck up a conversation with her. And I thanked her for the work she was doing in cleaning the train. And the smile that came on her face, the joy that came, and she said, nobody ever says that to me. I love my work. I love to prepare the train so that people feel comfortable. And I was reminded again of how little I do that and how much more often we have to do that. And I was reminded of the small acts of charity that we are all called to do, and especially in a community like ours, where there can also be quickly irritations. Because we are a community, we're human beings, we're all sinners. We all have our tics and our dits and this and that's. So especially there, charity. So that's the first small thing I would like to remind you of. And you will realize it's actually not so small. A second one, humility. And once again, I already addressed this briefly. We academics find this specifically a challenge. Humility. To all of you, I would like to say, you are not St. Thomas Aquinas. Please remember that. You are not. Neither are we as faculty. But we probably know a little bit more. So it's useful to listen to what the faculty has to say in leading you through your studies, and to do so respectfully. But one thing is sure, you are not St. Thomas Aquinas. A third element, a detail on which you can work, reverence and respect. The liturgies are not parties. They are certainly a party in heaven, but they are not a party in the way we dress. When we go to liturgy, we dress appropriately. We don't come in a t-shirt or in very short shorts. We come to the King of Kings. If we would be invited, I always tell that to my children. You know, I already have teenagers, and it's always a battle with the teenagers to convince them that they should dress appropriately for Mass. And I always tell them, if the Queen of England would invite you for a personal audience, would you go in your t-shirt? Of course you wouldn't. You would dress up well. That's the same if we go to liturgy. We are going to the King of Kings. We are asked some reverence in the way we enter the holiest of holy. And in the same line goes respect, and the one goes with the other. And this is another thing we have discussed as faculty. And we have therefore decided as faculty that we are formally reintroducing the request, or better to say, the obligation of all students to properly greet members of the faculty and the staff when you see them, not only in class, when they enter class, but also when you see them on the hallway, when you see them on campus. I very often, and many of my colleagues in the faculty have experienced that. A student walks by, hi, hi, or something the like. We ask you, and this is part of the faithfulness in the small details, when you meet a member of the faculty, when your professor enters class, when you meet them on the hallway on the campus, you greet them by their name and by their academic title. Hello, Dr. Vajdoshka. Good morning, Dr. Dolna, etc. And the same with members of the staff. They are here to serve you, but in order for them to do that, in order for us to do that, some basic rules of respect will be greatly beneficial in strengthening our life as a community. And it will go a long way in preparing you for the life after you have finished your studies here and come into the world. A fourth point, duty. There are many things you have to do as a student, in general for all of us that counts in life, that is simply a duty. Whether you like it or not, whether you enjoy it or not, it's a duty you have to follow. And it's again in the small things, the small duties, that we are preparing ourselves for the larger duties in life. Doing your course, your chores. It's a word I always find difficult to pronounce. Doing your readings for class. This is another big one. Doing your readings for class. You're getting a lot of readings here. If you don't do your readings, you're wasting your time here, because your readings are the key to the learning process here. It's your duty to do your readings. And the list goes on. Taking responsibility on campus. If you see something lying around that's not supposed to lie around there, do something about it. If you see something is broken, report it. If you see something is not in order, do something about it. We are all responsible for the great gift we have received with this campus, with our community, that has all been made possible by the generosity of many people unknown to you. So those four small things which require all of us, from all of us, our faithfulness. And as you see, they might actually be much bigger of a challenge than you think. Charity, humility, reverence and respect, and duty. I would really challenge you to make an effort in this year of focusing on these small points of faithfulness that then can grow you into a great servant of God. If you diligently work on being faithful in these small daily things, then and only then can you truly have the open and wide mind and heart to delve into your studies. There's a connection there. If there's this faithfulness in the small things, then your heart can be wide, your heart can be open, and you can delve into your studies, into your prayer life, and into the student life as a community. And that will form you for the life you are each called to live in this world. A world that desperately needs Christ proclaimed by each one of you on every street corner. And in this, we can all take an example from Archbishop Jean Barre of Aleppo. Please keep him and all our persecuted brethren in your daily prayers. And whenever you find something difficult, think of them, pray for them. And your time here at the ITI this coming year will be a great blessing. Thank you very much.